guess not. We're not pros. All of us. No, very. We'll do it very conversational.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenzino, host of Jake Gino Podcast, who is my co-host, a multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barber, Gene, how's it going?
Mr. Stenzino, I'm doing great, brother. How you doing this morning?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is the founder and CEO of Rockstar Capital, a Texas-based firm that specializes in investment and management of multifamily assets. We've grown to over 4,500 units. You know, half the time we get these things wrong. It might even be more than that. Over 23 communities and have been consistently listed as top 1% nationally for online resident satisfaction. You know you're doing something right when you're talking about the folks and customer service. So without further ado, Robert Martinez, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. A pleasure to be on. Thank you.
Hey, the pleasure is all ours. Gino always, you know, yells at me for snow plowing. So we do want to elaborate a little bit from where the company started. I think before the show, we talked a little bit coming off the back of the recession in 08. But, you know, I want to hear from you sort of how the company started and then the tie-in to the vertical integration there as well.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, like a lot of people, my first mentors were my parents, and they told me to go to school and get good grades. And I did that. And then what do you do when you get to college? Same thing. You have to get good grades and you get a good job. And you keep following these mentors, but you're only going to go as far as those mentors go because they can only show you what they know. And it wasn't until I hit some job dissatisfaction in the corporate workforce right around 2007 that I found a crazy guy on the radio here in Houston, and I joined his real estate club. So my story goes all the way back to 2007. Met a partner there. He and I formed a little company between 08 and 2011. We bought 2,000 units together. He was the face of the company. I was more of the operator, the guy, you know, the Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to the guy behind the curtain. That was me. But what I was doing was I was cutting my teeth. I pushed us through the recession. I got us through three 100% refinances between 2008, 2011, when nobody was lending money out. So I saw what a heavy recession does. I was one of those guys on the side of the fence where I was buying somebody else's misery, you know, and that's how I got started buying deals at 15.5 a door, 24.5 a door. What's another one? 26 a door, really, really low numbers. And understanding that, wow, I'm buying it this cheap, but somebody didn't pay that. Somebody paid much more than that, and they're probably losing their shirt. Of course, I'm not thinking about that. So as most partnerships do, they end. Everything has a start and an end, and he and I had an ending. And so in 2011, I started Rockstar. I brought on a couple of my key people that I kept from my previous management company, and I started doing it my way. I wanted that culture to be all about me. How I look at things, how I treat people, how I look at the residents, how I focus on resident retention. So we started that. So between, and it was just one deal a year, one deal in 2011, one deal in 2012, one deal in 2013, one deal. And then finally in 2014, we started buying a couple of deals at a time. So fast forward to 2023, we've purchased over 6,000 units at Rockstar, another 3,000 units at my other management company. We still have 4,500 units. Our management company, Rockstar Capital, has gone on to win 19 city, state, and national apartment association awards. And personally, I'm the only recognized two-time national apartment association owner of the year. We're heavy owner management. I know what's going on in all aspects of my business. And the mistakes that I've made in my business is when I gave that responsibility to other people. I went to Grant Cardone's growth conference.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard about this or something, but I heard that I get some rumor on the street, and you're like, man, they got some rumors going around about me. The rumor on the street was you got a mentoring session or something with Grant, told you to, you know, end the property management because you couldn't scale. And then if that's true, elaborate from there. Maybe let's go your side of it.
It's funny that the rumor's out there, but it is a true rumor. You know, I did pay Grant some mentoring dollars, and I wanted to get to the next level. And a lot of the advice that he gave me in other mentoring sessions was really good. That one particular advice, it was a mistake. He said that I should focus more on acquisitions. You know, this is around 2020, 2021. And, you know, around that time too, and I don't know if you guys have gone through this, our company is going through some changes internally. People that I had built the business around where now they've done well and they're leaving. And so right around 2019, right before 2020, I lost a couple of my key people. And that's hard because when they leave the business, a lot of what's in their head leaves with them. And if you're not the best at putting all procedures down and keeping it going, then you're going to suffer. And that's what happened to us. A lot of my key people that I met 7, 8, 9 years ago that I groomed them from like a leasing agent, and now they're head of my operations because I trusted in them, are gone. So it's like it puts it on me. Like, okay, well, now it's time for us to evolve. So I started looking at resumes, hiring big name people from big name property management companies. And I learned a lesson there. Big management companies have so many redundancies and so many people that it's not the same thing when you're coming to an owner operator where we're running lean and mean and we're trying to maximize investor dollars. See, they're just collecting a paycheck at the big management company, and where I'm not even charging heavy fees. I'm making my money on my override. I'm making my money on cash flow. I don't need all those heavy fee centric items that the big management companies were charging. So I didn't have a huge staff.
Well, you're probably only managing your own properties, right?
Yes, I was only. I still don't do third party management.
See,
today.
We're the same way, and our management company, you know, I don't want to say it came out of necessity, but that's where we wanted that control, and we wanted to drive, you know, what we refer to as PPU, which is profit per unit. To your point, we want to have control to make the properties make money, right? It's not about making like the management dollars per se.
Yeah, and I want to hit that too, right? Because it's not about control, you know? So, I mean, I want to get back to that point. So, you know, I had this session with Grant, and of course, Grant's never done property management, and he's been very successful what he's doing. He's like, I can see where you're going. And I've often been compared like a mini Grant. We have a similar style and just, you know, the thought.
You'd be the big Grant.
I could be big. Robert.
He's like 5'5", right?
Yeah. I want to be Robert, but he's got big ideas. And one of those was, man, every time I talk to you, you're always talking operations. You're always talking management. He goes, this is one of the greatest buying cycles ever. You got to buy as much as you can. And so, you know, to his defense, it was true. And so as I was going through this rebuilding at the management company and, you know, I couldn't find what I lost, I was getting frustrated. And so his advice to kind of like, you know what, you know enough now, you know what to keep an eye on, go get a big management company. You know, he actually recommended me the management company that they use. And so I interviewed them. I asked the right questions, I thought, and I went from there. It was nice to take a pause and take a reset and get away from the human aspect, because real estate's easy. People are difficult. So we did this. I did hire a management company, one of the top 5 management companies that has like 120,000 unit count. And I'm thinking, I'm going to get all this redundancy, all these people. Fuck, man. One of the greatest mistakes of my life was doing that. Because, you know, you see things, but you're like, you know what? You doubt yourself. I've had success, but, you know, these guys are doing it at such a big level. Their portfolio occupancy is, you know, 95, 96. And we were struggling a little bit at 91. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get this in. And the mistake that I did was that I didn't trust myself to remember how I got here. I forgot how I got all those awards that are out in the lobby right now, all those 19 city, state, national awards, because I wanted to trust these guys.
Just so the folks know, those are property management specific awards, right? Those are property management specific awards. I just wanted, so folks listening know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And the mistake that I learned was that they will fill occupancy at all costs. At all costs. They don't care, because that's how they get compensated, is occupancy, management fee. They don't care who they let in. They don't care the expenses that they charge to get it in. And we lost a lot of integrity within our group. Then when I'm starting to see things, I couldn't make changes with them fast enough. Even though I was the owner, I was getting overruled on things. I'm like, no, that's not how it needs to go. They were wanting to send my teams. And we're struggling at the lowest point in our portfolio. We got to like 84, 85%, which is really low on over 4,000 units. And they were forcing me to send my teams to some stupid culture building conference where they're going to charge me back $1,500 a person to attend, which we all know what these big conferences are.
Are we talking DEI or PPU here, man? Is it profit per unit or equity and inclusion?
Robert and Jake, there's a lesson in all of this.
Yeah.
What's good for Grant may not be good for Robert,
Yep.
It may not be good for Jake and Gino. And I'm sick and tired of everyone saying scale. Bigger's better. Bigger's better. I'm reading a book by Morgan Housel, his second book. And when we evolve, species that get bigger tend to get more fragile as well. So don't think that bigger is always better. It
Gino, that's insightful. Wow.
You like that, Jake.
Wow, we got a philosopher over here. Holy shit.
But listen, because I'm so sick of everybody saying you need to get the 6,000 units. So we have a very nice portfolio at 1,600 units owned by ourselves with no investors. You buy one deal a year like Robert did, and you buy one to two deals a year like Jake and Gino did. After 5 years, you are free, baby. And after 10 years, it is life changing, completely different. So what may be good for Grant, which is awesome for him, he wants to be the B. I don't need to be the B. I can be the 100
what's,
million.
What's the B?
The billionaire. Oh, the billion. He wants to be the billionaire. Yes. So I'm just I'm pointing that out because scale is great. You want to get some type of scale, but it doesn't have to be someone else's scale. Read the book Small Giants by Bo Burlingham. It really lays it out really well on being, we want to be the Chick-fil-A of the apartment industry. That's what Jake and I want to strive for. We want to have that customer service. So we like operations. So for us to do what you did would have been suicide for us as well, because we can't get 2,000 or 3,000 units a year, because we can't hire, especially during COVID and the pandemic when you can't find employees. So it's really important. Grant is wise. He's done really well, but Grant's done what's really the best thing for Grant. You should take his advice with a grain of salt and apply it to what you're trying to accomplish, what your core values are, what your values are, and what your mission statement is.
Yeah, you know, and I don't blame him at all. I'm my own man. I make my own decisions. And you, as you said, what works for him may not work for you. A lot of the other advice he gave me did work. Particular advice did not. So I realized that I had to pull the plug and cut bait. I think, you know, I am a really good operator. And at that time, we had anywhere from 9 to 12 months cash reserves stocked away. You know, even in the great times, I only give away what I need to give away. I kept the rest in reserve. And I'm thinking, you know, it needs to be there for a rainy day. And that rainy day was that management decision that I made. I mean, I think at the low, we lost 25% of our nest egg just through those first from January to May.
What year?
23.
That was in 23. Oh,
so at the same time as I'm going through this management change and I'm seeing my expense model increase, you know, we can get into the rest of the story. We're seeing interest rates pop. We're primarily in the Sun Belt. We saw our insurance double and triple. You know, God forbid we're in Florida where they couldn't even like get a child. And I mean, they couldn't even get insurance unless you gave away your firstborn child. You know, it was a really perfect storm of a lot of negative events all occurring at the same time. So I had to control one. You know, my dad said, he always said, I can only control what's in the four walls of my business. I can't control what's outside. So I could control who manages it. So I fired those guys. They knew they did a terrible job. I reclaimed it back in July 25th of 23. We took over with $800,000 of delinquency across the portfolio. Worse yet, you know, even though I lost a quarter of our cash supply, of our cash reserves, I also inherited a bunch of invoices that they weren't paying. Their accounting was so bad that they were recording it on the P&L, but the money was never making it out of the accounts to pay off the vendors. So we inherited, I don't know, close to $2 million of invoices. So here we are, fast forward to April. I'm super excited. We ended the month of March at a record low 180,000 delinquencies, which is pretty good on the 23, which is right around 3%. We had 13 of the 23 properties hit their delinquency bonus. Our NOIs jumping back up. Portfolio, we're at 91%, but we're also clean in our delinquency. So our economic is really close to 90% as well. So we're on the upward climb. And I will say that when you go through these events, you challenge yourself. You find out what you're made of. And there's all the common expressions, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, you know, survival of the fittest. What are you going to do? Everybody's watching, you know, and it brought out that inner person in me that I didn't even know was there, Jake. And you know, I didn't know I had that last gear left to access to get us out of this. I'm super excited because now it's April and I'm going to make my goal of telling my investors we're back to cash flowing and we're back to distributing, even with the higher rates. I mean, at one point I have 9 deals that are on floating rate debt. I've got now half of them wrapped up. And I still have another 3 to 4 that I got to get done probably this year and the beginning of next year. But I got to survive. I got to keep cash in there. I got to hold cash back. Our insurance just came in. It came back down from a high of like $1,800 a door to like right around $1,200 a door. So that produces some additional cash flow. My escrows are going to go down, which is a lot. You know, people don't talk about that, right? When your insurance goes up, your escrows last year didn't have it. So you got to wire the difference. And now the bank doesn't want to get scared. So, I mean, that doesn't want to be scared again. So they increase the escrows. So that strips your future cash flow. I mean, it was a wild time the last 12 months, but it built us. And I've learned some important lessons. I will never cede control again on any aspect of the business, whether it's underwriting, whether it's property management, whether it's our maintenance teams. I need to be involved in all the big meetings. No policy happens without my stamp of approval. And that's how it has to be now. I got scared to the point of almost extinction. And now we're at a point now where we're surviving again and starting to thrive again. And so it's very rewarding for us. And that's why I was really excited to share that with you guys is that, you know, I don't think everybody could have done it, but we did. And in the process, we lost the deal, you know, and we can talk about that. We had a real deal article come out. I'm not the kind of guy that hides from stuff. I'm going to be very transparent. They contacted me. I gave my side the story so they understood. Others have not. And of course, when you don't give your side of the story, anything gets printed. But I was able to write my own paragraph. Most of what I said made that article. But, you know, we did it. We bought a deal right in the prime of a 2022. It was we closed that deal, guys. You're not going to believe this. We closed that deal right before the very first rate hike. It was like the sweet spot of what was going on. So we had to go through higher insurance. I had to go through this management changeover and floating rate debt that, you know, we were paying debt that we should never have been paying. We blew out all of our underwriting metrics where you're supposed to add, you know, 2 points and all that, right? All the safe things they teach you. This was a whole new world. It's like you wake up one day and water isn't wet anymore and the sky isn't blue. Like the laws of physics didn't exist anymore. And we got bled out. Not knowing how to handle any of this, right? I reached out to different people. I was told to hire a consultant. You know, I just finished watching a lot of those 2008 movies on the recession. And I'm like, there was always a big consultant in the room that was there talking to everybody. I'm like, I don't know anything about that finance scheme. And that's the other thing we could talk about too, right? When we're doing underwriting, when we get into these real estate education classes, they don't talk to you a lot about the asset management portion of this. They don't talk to you a lot about creative financing. So I didn't know a lot of that. I know how to put heads in beds. I know how to keep them there. I know that my number one expense metric is move outs. So keep move outs at a minimum, have the highest resident retention, focus on resident reviews. But none of that ever talked about like how I get creative with the bank. So I hired a consultant, paid him $100K. And ultimately the advice was miss a payment. Miss a payment. Get their attention. And that was the worst fucking advice that you could ever have. If you miss a payment, you surrender all. I learned this the hard way, and I'm going to share with everybody that's listening because I don't want you to go through that. You surrender a lot of your rights as the borrower. And now you can fast forward all this interest, and it shows up there on the mortgage coupon. And it's like, what is it? Oh, don't worry about it. I forgot what it's called, but there's this like fast forward. So I made up the payment right away when I realized that this negotiation technique didn't work. It soured the relationship with the lender. As we went on, I raised the capital to save the deal. I raised $4.5 million. I raised it in 30 days from the investors. Remember, this is 22. It's much harder to raise money today to save a deal because everybody's already been in line saying, I need money. Like, you know, Oliver Twist, sir, can I have some money? Like you're last in line now. I was one of the first in line with my group. Of course, they're in other deals now. It'd be very difficult to raise that. So we had the money raised. I was going to replenish the interest reserve, put money back in our accounts, had it all. I took back management. We're fixing all the things. Like when you were working with a big management company, you know, you're at their mercy. They had one in-house recruiter for all of Houston, and they had 30,000 units here. I have one in-house recruiter, and I got 45 units across Texas. And so I can keep positions filled. They couldn't. So my OT was through the roof.
It's a
and,
joke.
You know, all these other expenses that they couldn't manage properly, or HR. Like, you know, I am HR today. Like, if you tell me you have a problem, I'm going to get her together, and we're going to sit it out, and we're going to man up, you know, and someone's going to stay, and someone's going to go and end the story. in those kind of companies, you have to commit murder to get let go because they're so afraid of a lawsuit. But when your ball's on the line, you're like, dude, see you later. I'm, you know, you got 90 days to perform or you're out. If you don't spark it up, you're gone. But back to the story, at the last second, the lender pulled the rug for me. I had already taken back management. I had the money ready to wire them. And they said, hey, everybody's good. We talked to committee. Last thing, we need you to go back to the same management company. I'm like, what? No. They're part of the reason why we're in this situation. Like, no, I know that. But, you know, you shouldn't have taken back management without letting us know and this and that. I'm like, my balls are on the line here and I've got your money. You're telling me that I have to go back to what put me in this, to part of what put me in this situation? And they said, yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to die.
Is it a Fannie deal?
No, it was through a debt fund.
Okay.
It was through a debt fund. I'm not going to mention their name.
That's fine.
But it was through a debt fund. And I said, listen to me. I said, I'm going to die on this hill because I cannot in good faith send you my investors $4.5 million.
You're wasting your time at that point.
If we're going to go back with the same management company, I'll lose this deal if I have to. Because I'm not going to lose any more money. And they weren't bluffing. And they said,
well, you weren't either, apparently.
No, I was. Yeah. Take it or leave it. So yeah, you know, and that's a double-edged sword. I'm glad I didn't, you know, lose any more money, but you lose reputation. And that's where this article came out. I've never had a deal go bad. I've never had an issue. I lost $18 million, of the money that we had raised on that deal. But you know what? In defeat is how people remember you. And I asked myself, how would I want to be remembered on this? So first of all, you got to increase investor communications like there's no tomorrow. You got to keep them up to date on everything. You got to let them know where you're at, what the situation is, and then they have to make their own conversations on what they want to do. Then when it didn't work our way, I told them why. And I said, listen, I know you're all in shock. I'm in shock. Nobody lost more money than me. You know, to make that last payment, we didn't have the money. I put in another $800,000 of my own money. So I had $700,000 in the original investment. I had $800,000 that I put in as a cash infusion to help us make that next payment to keep the negotiation alive with the lender so I could raise the $4.5 million. I would have been paid back the $800,000 had I raised that money. It was a very selfish decision I could have made to send the lender the $4.5 million, pay myself back, limit my losses, but I didn't do that. I couldn't in good faith wire that money over if I couldn't have complete autonomy and control. And so I told the investors the situation. We set up a calendar invites for anybody to want to have a chat with me. So we had, I don't know, 150 investors in that. I went through probably close to 100 of one-on-ones where everybody got 15, 20 minutes to say what you need to say. You know, it's a death. It's the end of a relationship. It's you got to have closure with that. And I made sure that everybody had their opportunity to say what they needed to say. And most of them took it extremely well. They're accredited investors. They know that this happens. Many of them, you know, 66% of my investors are repeat investors. So they've made money in other deals, you know, so they lost 100K or maybe they lost a little bit more than that. I think all but one was a really hard convo. And it was a single mom, you know, who, I don't know, her husband had passed away and, you know, this is part of her future. And we had to have that combo. I had to hear that, you know, and hear how this hurt her. But that's what makes you stronger. That's what makes you better. Mm-hmm. You know, so that you don't make those mistakes in the future. So you think about not going so fast and not being so cavalier. And we get back to what you guys were saying, growing organically, one deal at a time, making sure that you're making the right call. Because I don't ever want to feel that kind of pain again. That was an absolute low point for me in my career. You know, as I said, I have all these great credentials, but nobody remembers the wins. They remember the loss. You know, you talk to Jordan, he doesn't remember all the game-winning shots, but he remembers the ones that he didn't make. And, you know, I feel like I let the investors down on that deal. And there's a lot of people who don't even know me who are throwing, you know, slack and whatever. And like, you know, nobody who's doing better than me ever said anything to me. It's always the people that are doing worse to me. And you guys have probably had your share of hate. I know that I can sleep at night knowing that I did what was best for the investors. I hung in there every step of the way. I doubled down on my own investment, more than doubled down on my investment to keep the deal alive. And I just know that I can sleep at night knowing that I did all I could. It relit a fire in me that I think maybe had gone out during the last couple of 3 years of our transition before we went to management. Now that we brought back management, it's great. It's like resetting, leaving all the shit that didn't work behind, bringing back key people, kind of getting the band back together of guys that other people had run off that you know they know what they're doing, so brought them in. We're a young company again, but it's a young company with people that I know from my past that I'll put my balls on the line for. And we're really tight now as a company. And because of that, I have a lot of people who think like an owner. And in fact, the key ones that I really needed the most, they came back and have been there, you know, those early days. And, you know, you guys have been there. When you take back management of over 4,000 units, that's a lot of work. Like, it's not just setting up the management software. You got to find all the contracts.
Dude, the day-to-day is a lot of work, regardless of trying to – versus just restarting it, right? Like, yeah. That's a whole nother level of bullshit that you got to jump through right there.
For about 3 to 4 months, we didn't leave any earlier than 9 o'clock every night. We didn't. And that's honest. Everybody's listening here in my podcast studio. That's true. We did not leave any earlier than 9 o'clock every day. We lived here at the office because there was so much to do. And I'm extremely, and I'll be eternally thankful. And some of those that are the most critical, you know, I realize you guys put everything for me. You came when we were at our low point, and I've made them partners in my business. They get a piece of the pie now because of what they showed me and who they were. They could have left me for dead, and they didn't do it. They believed in me, believed in our company, our culture. And now our culture is kicking ass again. We're back to distributing in April and to our investor, which I think is still very difficult to do today. And we're back there. So I'm excited about the future. I think sometimes you have to go through a moment like that to not just humble yourself, but to just remind yourself what you're fighting for, what you're playing for. And we survived it. You know, I don't think you get this big. I mean, again, I got 4,500 units. I lost almost 300 on that deal. I was at 4,800 and change. I think you have to lose one, you know, to really remember.